Hey, good people, thank you for coming to my website, johnecoleman.org. Glad that you can take some time off. You know, I had a wonderful, wonderful morning this morning. I got up around 7:30, and like snap of a finger, clockwork, God woke me up, and I got up and went into the kitchen to make a cup of coffee like I usually do every morning. Yes, a couple of small cups of coffee and maybe a couple of pieces of toast and a little bowl of oatmeal. You know, that instant cereal that they have in the little packets now. Very convenient. You don't have to open up a box of Quaker Oats. Remember that back in the day? Ah, Quaker Oats. Our family was raised on that. I want to play a record right now. I was on the internet this morning and I was listening to some of my favorite artists. And, of course, Donny Hathaway comes to mind because this brother, when he was alive, was my favorite male artist, just singing from his soul. He had a love to sing the spirituals. He would sing songs that would touch the hearts of many, many, many black people. And, of course, someone else wrote the number, this song for you, but Donny Hathaway made it popular. But in all of the persons that I've heard sing this song, I've never heard anyone sing it like this man. And I found it on the internet. As a matter of fact, they have the whole album on the internet on YouTube. Three more tenors. It should be called. It was an RCA live concert done in 2001, the year that my wife passed away. It's amazing because I had never heard of the group before. And just some of the best tenor voices in the African-American community. And the record that I'm going to play now by this gentleman, you've probably never heard of him. His name is,
ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Roderick Dixon.
That's his name, Roderick Dixon. And he's going to sing this song for you. And I dedicate this to, of course, the memory, the living memory of my living companion. My female soulmate, the woman that made me stop and pay attention to femininity like I never have before. And since this woman, I haven't felt this with any other woman my entire life. And I want to dedicate this entire webcast to, I'm just feeling it today. On this 26th of October, 2021, I'm feeling it. I'm dedicating this song to Lucy. Every word of it, every breath of it, the way the brother sings the song, brings the song to life. It's a living momentum of what I should have had with the woman that I had. But I was too dumb to recognize it, to know it, to know where I was and who I was at the time when I was. Now, since I've suffered the loss of her presence with me, I can bring it back through Roderick singing this wonderful, wonderful piece. This song is for you, Lucy.
Times. I've sung a lot of songs, I made some bad rhymes. I've acted out my life in stages. With 10,000 people watching, but we're alone, and I'm just singing this song for you. What I hope to be, I've treated you unkindly, but girl, can't you see? There's no one more important to me. Darling, can't you please see through me? 'Cause we're alone and I'm just singing my song for you. You told me precious secrets. Truth withhold nothing. You came out in front, and I was hiding. Oh, but now I feel so much better. Of my love and vanity.
That's right, boy. Sing. Sing, boy. Yeah.
I love you, I love you, I love you, 'cause you're a friend of mine.
Sing that love song, boy. Sing it. Sing
and
it.
When my life is over.
When my life is done, boy. Say it. Say,
remember when we were together?
Yeah.
We were alone.
Yeah, that's it. What was I doing?
Singing my song. See?
To my Lucy. I cannot. I've listened to that song, you know, already today about four times in a row. And, you know, I was thinking about all the things that I didn't say to my wife that I should have said to my wife, you know. Years after she's gone, and I still can't bring myself to fall in love with another woman. I don't know how to do that. You have had somebody come by in your life one damn time. One time. And you had a prize. You had a gem. In that little Filipino woman. Every sermon that I preached, every lesson that I taught, every counseling session that I have where money would come in, you know, I gave her the money. She'd take care of the checkbook. I didn't do that. Money, what's that? I didn't need it. I've never been a money person. That's why I'm in the same house I moved in 1974 after I married her. Money never has been the thing that drove me. Everything I did, I was doing it for her. And some of my male friends tell me that. That's where I screwed up because I didn't do it the way they would do it. No. If I want to get my frame of reference right, I speak with my daughters, and they straighten me out. They say, yeah, Daddy, we remember those tumultuous times when Mommy wanted to speak with you, and you were never available because you were too busy doing ministry. I was too busy worrying about a men's retreat that I was going to have to do with a bunch of white boys out in Simi Valley. I was too carried away with how things were going on at the vet. What a term. You had to be there to experience it during the time. Now, I suffer the most because I miss her the most. Because she was supposed to grow old with me. You see? And I can't think of another person, female or male, that I would rather be with, to grow old with, than Andalucía Garrendola Soledad Monblanco Coleman. Lucy Coleman. Thinking about her on this Monday, the 26th of October, 2021, in her presence, because this studio is where she last slumbered and went into unconsciousness in this room. July 2001, right before 9/11. Thank God she didn't have to witness that, because I think when that took place, it would have killed her. Yeah, I'm glad I'm doing this webcast. I miss her. I miss her presence. Though I have spoken with her on many occasions since she's passed away, because I'm one of those black men that believe in speaking to your loved ones and your ancestors. Carry me through. I don't need the quote-unquote image in my mind of a white Jesus that I talk to. I don't do that. Though I speak with a living God. Yes, 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 yes. Let's not get it twisted. You know, God knew what he was doing. Man, this is great. I can talk about this. Think about this. I can acknowledge this. This is beautiful. I can acknowledge it because, you know, I know a lot of guys that do not know how to acknowledge whether or not they have ever loved for their love, great love, towards their most significant other. I was speaking with a person that was speaking to me about marriage, and I said, no, I would never marry you, nor would I ever marry again. And they asked me why, and I said, because I gave all the love that I could ever conjure up to Andalusia. What do you mean? Was she a passionate person toward you? Did she reach your passionate goals? No, that was not a role. That was your role. That was your role to make my love passion come out, not hers. Her role was to love me in a place where there's no space nor time. See the words of the song. I can't get it out of my mind. She loved me in that space. Nobody else can love me in that. You know, you hear all these people talking about love and true love and all that. Well, listen to Pastor John, your internet pastor. I had a helpmate, a life sponge living with me 35 years, loving her where there was no space or time. I remember when she first fell ill, when she had her first stroke. No, did I see? I ceased doing everything. But on my own, I found a place to get the sermons done, the lesson formats done. You should see my office here. I got stacks and stacks of manuscripts, papers, studies that I've done. I was supposed to be doing those things on my website here every day, bringing them afresh to you. Some of these things created back in 1988, before some of you were even born, I did this. 85, 82, 79, on a dot matrix computer. Old stuff. I wonder how we would go over. You know, I was thinking about trying to locate this song on the internet, and I think I'll try to find it now. And it was one of my favorite songs, a church song written by Andre Crouch. I'm going to type this in. Oh, yeah, here it is. And this is a song that made Christian music very popular to me. I hope that it plays through this speaker system so that you could hear it. I want to play it. Wait a minute. Let me. I hope you can hear it.
I'm so delighted to be here tonight, and I'm grateful for Jesus Christ and for what he means to me. And I don't know how I got here on Indian night, but I'm here.
Wait a minute. Let me pause this, because you see, I'm picking up a little something here that I don't want to. Hold on. I'd like to go way back and play this clip, and it's on YouTube. It's by Andre Crouch. He was doing a Billy Graham crusade. I forget where it was, but I want you to listen to a song that Lucy and I first heard on this television broadcast years ago when I was a very young Christian. I used to wear my hair like Andre is wearing it on the video here. Let's get right into it. Andre Crouch had a Billy Graham crusade, singing Through It All. Listen to this.
I'm so delighted to be here tonight, and I'm grateful for Jesus Christ and for what he means to me. And I don't know how I got here on Indian night, but I'm here. I'm so grateful today because I can say that I have Christ in my life. And at the early age of 9 years old, I gave my heart to Jesus. My father was what we call a bootleg preacher. He didn't want to own up to being a preacher. He was in Bible college, and he never wanted to be a preacher. He was a businessman. And nevertheless, the Lord kept talking to him. And once the Lord puts a hook in your jaw, you can't escape. And I remember him being invited to a little church about 60 miles out from Los Angeles, where we are from, and this was a little church, the kind of church that even had a little outhouse in the back, and there was no musician there or anything. And my dad didn't know whether it was the Lord's will for him to be there, because he didn't want to be a preacher anyway. And they said, oh, this is our pastor. And they wanted him so much to be the pastor of this little country church after hearing him speak that afternoon. And time went on, and my uncle, which is a presbyter of Southern California, asked him. He said, Ben Crouch, why don't you go out there and just kind of get the church organized? He said, well, being that the church doesn't have a musician, I'm going to pray, if God wants me to be there, I'm going to pray that God will give Andre the gift of music so he can play for the church. And I had just accepted the Lord at the age of 9, and I was about 11 years old at the time. And my dad calls me up out of the audience and says, Andre, if God were to give you the gift of music, would you use it for his glory? I said, yeah, Daddy.
Now, this is very interesting, because Andre is no longer with us in life here on the planet. He's transitioned on. And he had a tumultuous ending of his life, if you know anything about his life. But very influential in my life, because he was a black man that was really on the cutting edge, getting things done for the Christian obligations. Let's continue to listen to this very vivid testimony and this song that shaped my early Christianity.
And then he prayed for me right there. And 2 weeks later, he said, okay, here you are. And he just stuck me up on the piano. I began to play. And I had a bad stammering problem. I couldn't say over 3 words without either kicking somebody or pounding the floor or something like that. And I wanted so much to express myself. And I was so grateful for the gift of music and how God had touched my life. And right there, I knew that God was going to use me. And I was just sharing with Brother Graham how, watching some of the telecast, how I was so blessed. And I said, oh, if I could just sing and people would be there and find Jesus, you know. And it just impressed my life and put a just really enriched my life at a very early age. And now God has taken us to about 40 different countries of the world. And I've seen him do so many miracles. How 3.5 years ago, I was sick unto death, and I found Jesus Christ to be a healer. And I tell you, he's everything. And I'm just trying to tell everybody, all the young people especially, in all thy ways, acknowledge him, and he'll direct your path.
This was very important back in the late 60s, early 70s, these Billy Graham crusades. And when he had Andre Crouch on, well, this just magnified the African-American experience. And remember, keep it in mind, it was in 1967 that I became a Christian. 1967, when I heard this voice of God in my head. And this clip that I'm playing for you right now, it says on YouTube that it has about 8,664,175 views. And so this shows that long after this man is gone, he is still ministering, because I'm playing it for you here in the year 2021. It's called Through It All, Andre Crouch, and it's on YouTube. Let's continue to listen.
Any moment that you've given your heart to Jesus, and a song that he's given me after a hard time in my life, a particular time I thought I couldn't sing, I thought I couldn't smile, but he gave me this little song, and I trust this should be a blessing to you. I've had many tears and sorrow. I've had questions for tomorrow. There've been times when I didn't know right from wrong. But in every situation, God gave me blessed consolation, that all my trials come to only make me strong. I've been a lot of places, and I've seen millions of faces, but there were times when I felt so all alone. Precious lonely hour, for Jesus let me know that I was his own. Now I can say, through it all, through it all, oh yes, I've learned to trust in Jesus. I've learned to trust in God. Solve them. I'd never know what faith in the Word of God could do.
Yeah,
now
boy.
I can tell the world that through it all,
through it all,
through it all, oh yeah,
through it all.
Don't you know I've learned to trust in Jesus? I've learned to trust in God. You'll never know that God can solve them.
Yeah.
You'll never know what faith in the Word of God could do. But you can stand like a soldier and say, that through it all, or sometimes through the fire, but through it all, oh yes. Don't you know I've learned to trust in Jesus? I've learned to trust in God. Upon his word, through my sickness and pain, I've learned to depend upon his word. When the doctor walked from my bed and shook his head, right then I learned to depend upon his word. Ooh.
telling you, I remember, and the stadium was packed, and he was the only black face that I can see on this YouTube clip, because Christianity was in. So there's Billy Graham standing up there before his hair turned white. That's when Graham would, no, that was George Beverly Shea that was getting ready to talk there. Man, those were the days that Lucy and I grew up together. In, wait a minute. I didn't want to hear this. Let me see this. Let me stop that. Okay. There was so much back in the day. So much to keep you tied into God. So much that kept you from going astray. And other people kind of tapped in on this. And as I scroll down the YouTube pages here and listen to the different renditions of not only Andre singing, but other artists, it kind of makes you stop and think about some things. That's why when I play, you know, the three more tenors, and I think about the songs that a lot of our songwriters have put out. I'd like to play another one here, since I'm thinking about it, and let me go on back and see if I can type in the name of, and I want that to be, I was listening to a song by Donny Hathaway, and I want to play it for you. You probably heard of it. Okay. Donny Hathaway. And I want to play a song by him that, I Love You More Than You Ever Knew. Now that was a really, I like the way Donny Hathaway sings, "We Need You Right Now, Lord." This is the song that I want to play for you. This is the one. And here's a man that, you know, you hear people say that he died before his time. He had a voice, this brother. Let me stop talking and just play it. We need you right now.
Here's a song that I wrote about 3 weeks ago. Every once in a while, I like to write something to my creator because I believe in him.
Yeah.
We need you right now.
Was a time.
There's no one else.
Wait a minute, let me pause it. It was a time when you could, and this thing got over 3,226,000 hits on it. So that means that a lot of human beings have been listening to this. And I remember the song. But it was a time when an artist could get behind the keyboards and sing unto God his glory, his majesty, his greatness. It was a time when no one was ashamed to mention that they believed in God. I think I told you a few days ago on a webcast when I was a professor, I mentioned to the other professors in West LA College that I was a believer in the Christ of the Bible. And they all laughed at me. All the professors laughed. They found it hilarious that I, a man of learned, could believe, listen to Donnie sing, listen to him express this to you.
To turn to you, but you, yeah. You're the only answer.
answer to the situation.
That's right.
That we've gotten ourselves into. So master, won't you please come down and give us a helping hand, 'cause we need you, we need you right now. There's a lot of people going hungry.
Say it, man.
'Cause they can't get nothing to eat.
Think about the people south of our borders. Go on, man. Sing about it, Donnie. Yeah.
There's a lot of people going naked.
That's right, man. They ain't got clothes to put on.
They ain't even got clothes. So master, won't you please come down, and give us a helping hand. Yeah, 'cause we need you.
We need you.
Say we need you.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
We need you right now. We do.
This wasn't in no church. This was in the club. Oh, I love this. I love this. Hey, thank you for coming to my website. This is PJ, your internet pastor. That's right. I'm not pastoring no church. I don't need to pastor no church. I have a world full of technology in front of me. I've learned how to use it, how to plug it in here, plug it in there, play this, play that, and do all that kind of stuff. I'm just enjoying myself. Now, you know, here's another choir that very well known, the Mississippi Mass Choir, okay, Near the Cross. This is a traditional arrangement. Listen to this one. Listen.
One of these Mississippi songs.
Yeah, Mississippi folk, huh? Old school church music.
Jesus keep me near the cross. There's a precious fountain.
While he sing this song, let me tell you a story. I had been baptized in the church maybe 4 or 5 weeks. And I had never visited another Baptist church like my own. And my pastor had a friend, had a little church growing. And my wife and I, we would go with him when he went to visit. And he invited us to go. I didn't know what I was getting involved in. But I went to visit this Black Baptist church. It was somewhere in South Los Angeles, south of where we were on Jefferson and Central. And they were singing a song like this. And I had never heard that kind of singing before. And my wife, being a Filipino and Asian, she had never heard it either. And so the folk were singing like this, and it was all into it. I've heard the song at the church that I was at. Jesus, keep me near the cross. I couldn't put it together. Why did I have to be near someone being crucified? It was like, okay, if that's the story that I'm to believe, what effect did it have on Black people? When I saw the emotion, listen to that choir. Listen to that choir. Yeah. The basis. It was during those days that I learned the deepness of this colonialized religion that was given to us. And when it was put on the back of us as slaves, we took it for all that it stood for. You heard Andre Crouch sing about it. Think about it. Listen. And let me tell you, some of the best voices that have ever listened. Black people singing about God. Listen. Ah.
You better sing, boy.
And the female voice in the choir. I don't know whether you understood this, but back in the day in church, if you were a member of the choir, your status went up because you wore that colorful robe, and the choir directors, like here in this Mississippi Mass Choir singing Near the Cross traditional arrangement, man, they got a choir director out in front of them. And these folk got on the robes and they're hollering and screaming. And when everybody is screaming these same attributes towards the God that created them, it's a way of, as James Washington put it in his book, Black Religion, they're shouting away, they're screaming away the problems, the perplexities of being the children of slaves. They are singing themselves into victory. Listen to this.
The government is hiding this from seniors.
Wait a minute.
I saw it on the news last night.
Shut up.
All I did was...
Listen to that. Now, see, you have to be black to understand that experience.
You really do. You really do, because if you are a white Christian,
an Anglo, meaning that, you know, you don't come from the culture. You don't come from the culture. You can't feel the anxiety, the angst, if you will, of being black. And that was Joseph Washington, not James Washington. Joseph R. Washington Jr. wrote a book back in 1965 on Beacon Press called Black Religion, The Negro and Christianity in the United States. And I'd like to read a few lines from that, and that'll help you understand the music that I've been playing for you. It says that it is assumed that their theological education must not interfere with the primary task of spiritualizing the congregation of whatever socioeconomic orientation. In other words, in classical cultural terms, there is no difference between the Negro Baptist Church and the Baptist Church proper. In folk terms, however, there is. Not only do we Negro Baptists have a way of preaching and singing, but there is a meaning to our imagery that is particular to us. That's what Brother Washington says. He says, this image we held before a class of preaching by one instructor at a school of religion in the southern section of the United States. And I'd like to read what he says about Aunt Jane. Aunt Jane is not interested in theological understanding, although you must convey a certain amount of savor flair. She expects to be, watch this, relieved of thinking and inspired by sacred words, vividly portrayed. See, that's the role of the preacher. You have to understand that. You will be successful in the extent that you are commanding, articulate, clear, covocal, illustrative, and dramatic. Remember, Aunt Jane is impressed less by what is said than by the enthusiasm with which it is said. Now, Joseph is absolutely correct, because when Lucy and I used to visit these places, we were awed at the, I said, what is going on here? Now, I know what was going on, being black. What's going on? You know, they got a term now, black while driving and all that, black while walking down the street. Well, in the church, it's black by living. By living. When I became a pastor of a church in 1982 is when I was ordained as a minister. And 1985 is when I became the pastor of that church, the senior pastor, the most senior pastor. You know, they used to try to call me doctor. And I said, no. I'm working on my master's degree. I'm not going towards a doctorate, and so you don't have to call me doctor. Just call me John. That was our the expectation. Joseph goes on and he says in his book on page 91, he says, the Negro pastor is expected to be intensely loyal to the Negro enterprises on all class levels. I had days when you would come to the church and we would talk about jobs and career day. And I remember one day at the church, I brought some policemen through there, city workers and all that. We had a whole Saturday set up for career day. The successful leader in terms of his following gives evidence of his, of his entrance. It's not only his ability to be an astute pastor, summarizes it. Now, listen, here's one guy summarizing it. I have no illusions about my limitations and ability, time and energy. I have never been solely interested in seeing that my people get into heaven, and more that they are not interested in this hope either. In other words, the pastor says it's not about getting to heaven. He says they demand that I be all things to all men. And this means a consuming secular interest in my preaching. See, and I never did that. My preaching always took on never the secular, but the sacred. I preached the Word of God from the linguistical studies of the exegetical behavior of the Word of God when I proclaimed it. Okay, but this preacher says, as well as his weekly activities, then he goes on and says, in the eyes of my people, I am qualified to carry out these functions. Race and ethnic leaders, moral instructor, preacher, church builder, labor arbiter, organizational official, promoter of business, social and welfare agent, denominational spokesman, and educator, quote unquote. That wasn't me, friends. And that's why I was never popular as a Baptist minister in the black community. Joseph goes on and he says on the bottom paragraph of page 91, the leadership of Negro religious societies is highly secular. Often ministers are frustrated social workers in religious groups with little or no social work professional competence or the insight of a theologian. That's why when I come against people like Charles Blake at West Angeles, Fred Price at Crenshaw Christian Center, Noel Jones in the City of Refuge, did I say that right? All these people have no theological background at all, but they have quadruple the amount of people that would listen to me because theological education was not important. Joseph goes on and says, moreover, the majority of Negro ministers who have degrees receive them from colleges and seminaries, which leave much to be desired. In other words, it ain't too much there that you can find some exegetical content to what they believe. For the most part, professional social workers are more skillful in their chosen work, receiving their graduate degrees from accredited graduate schools than are the ministers who are elevated according to the number of community activities in which they directly participate in, or now in the sense of the African church of how many crowds they can pack into the building. Now, here I am, I'm 77 years old, going on 78, feeling like the Lord is still speaking to me, and I will never degrade myself down to an emotional happenstance. I played the choir because I love to see black people singing and happy, because when we go to church, we got to be happy. Here's another paragraph that I underline on page 92, mental paragraph. It says, there have been a few who have not capitulated to the secular perspective or pretended to provide some special spiritual power. I'm one of those few. And since Joseph Washington wrote about this in 1965 and is, excuse me, 2021, I'm still abiding by it. But he says, but the combination of social concern and Christian depth is the dimension of the most demanding order, escaping those who are not rooted in a theological tradition and frustrating those who are. And I frustrated a hell of a lot of them because they said, wait a minute, John is educated. John got a master's in theology from Talbot Theological Seminary, Biola University. That's a white institution that used to be in downtown Los Angeles that chaired the Church of the Open Door down there. They had Biola University downtown years ago. That's before they moved to La Mirada. And then, of course, then you got your John MacArthur breakoffs. And then he started in Panorama City. I won't get into the politics of white theologues, because when I asked them to give me, and this is still on my mind, man, I can't believe I've spoken over an hour here on this webcast, but when you ask the average white theologue about the theological dictionary of Gerhard Kittel, and did they know that Kittel, the great German theologian, was involved in the final resolve to get rid of every Jew on the planet, I can't get an answer from the white cemeteries why they still tell their boys to buy this set of books and study from them. Oh, I do know the reason why, because it was the most extinct and direct Greek exegesis that you will ever find of the New Testament in the world today. I threw out my whole set of books, poured molasses on it first, and so that nobody would find the books worthy if they ever found them. That's how much I detested what Kittle stood for, even though he was a learned man in the Greek and the exegetical flavor in which I dedicated my entire life to. Oh, my goodness, I'm enjoying myself. And I do hope that you are enjoying listening to me. I just turned to page 95 and it said, worship. Excessive emotionalism, dubbed escapism, characterizes the popular image of the Negro and his religion. And that's what you just heard when you listened to the Mississippi Mass Choir. Excessive emotionalism, dubbed escapism, because that's the way they escape from their problems. You know, that's why you got Shirley Caesar in front of you screaming. And hell, she looked like grandma or great auntie. This religion is something. And so I'm not against it. I'm just saying call it what it is. And, you know, when you think about black people and Joseph writes and he says their hopes dashed by the reality of a segregated society, Negroes, black folk, usin, any way you want to put it, took refuge in institutional maintenance and emotional fervor as a substitute for militant and direct action. And this is interesting because during the time that I was a young man, my associate minister asked me, John, what you think about the Black Panther Party? Because at that time in the booming 70s, by the time when my daughters were being born, if I had gotten involved in the Black Panthers, I would have dropped this church stuff completely. See, but I didn't take refuge in an institution of maintenance and emotional fervor. I did it because God called me to do it. God called me. Thus, Joseph says, there is nothing unique in the worship life of the Negro. Now, this is a black man writing about black religion. And here I am in 2021 talking about it because Dr. George Moore gave me the book when I was, I had to interview in order to go to school at Talbot Theological Seminary, and George Moore was a black representative, doctor of philosophy that had to interview me. And when I had told him with my fervency about what I wanted to do in the black church, in the black community, to make the church strong, the family strong, the vital relationship between men and women strong, he gave me this book and he says, you need to read this book and this will help you. I didn't know why he gave me that book. And after George Moore is dead now, but after years of him giving me this treatise, and here I am in the year 2021 of October the 26th, still reading from it, still helping you from it, and still letting it make reference to what I'm saying. Listen to what Joseph Washington says. What is taken for uniqueness is but extreme of what may be found incomparable to white congregations. In other words, the white congregations see it as extreme. They don't understand. They can look in the Mississippi Mass Choir, say, why are these people hollering and screaming and carrying on like this? A lot of our more educated young black people would say, well, we're too educated to fall into that. Black people don't have to do that. They don't have to put their emotions all over the world like that for them to see. Man, you know what? You need to get that right. You need to get that right. This is a wonderful book, and I'm glad that it's in my library. And I've gone by 6 minutes over the hour. I'm kind of glad I did, in a sense, because it gave me an opportunity to talk with you about important things, very important things. I'm going to end up this situation by playing what? I want to play something. I want to play Aretha Franklin live at the New Temple Missionary Baptist Church, singing a song that I believe that all of us remember. Aretha, Amazing Grace.
The next song needs no introduction.
And let me tell you, this song was recorded back in 1972. Okay? And so now here I am. Both of my daughters are being born. Me and Lucy are crowding into the church. We, all of our money, all of our hopes, all of our everything. And when this came out, it blew our minds.
The other day in rehearsal, Aretha began to sing it. When she got to the part that says, "Through many dangers." And I looked over at her and saw the tears rolling out of her eyes.
Now, you know who that is talking, right? That's Brother James Cleveland. He had a church right here in Los Angeles, right down the street. Yes, they met in that little building down there. What was that on? Washington Boulevard, that's right. It's a Seventh-day Adventist thing down there now. But and then James bought him a place down on Slauson and Western, bought a supermarket down there. Oh, I can tell you some stories about James, but listen to this, listen to this.
Because never did we think, I think 20 years ago, that God would do great things for us. Can I get a witness here tonight?
Gotta say something right now, because the pianist is dead, the singer is dead, the age is dead, but the pianist is alive and the singer is alive, because talent as raw and as beautiful as this can never die. Aretha is the mother of soul in the African-American community from this day ever. If a comet should hit this planet and blow it to smithereens, we will never forget these sounds.
I see.
That's it. That's it, Aretha. Through many, that's it. Yeah. Everybody in the room knew what she was talking about. Yeah. Stomp it. That's it. Sing. Better sing it, girl.
And that same old green.
Yeah.
They call it God's amazing.
Yeah.
Oh, amazing.
James Cleveland had to get up from the piano and break down and start crying. Couldn't help it. Everybody in the room was weeping. Everybody in the room. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
You want to know what I love about this video? And you can find it on YouTube. It's called Aretha Franklin, Amazing Grace, live at New Temple Missionary Baptist Church. That live clip for 9 minutes and 46 seconds is the song that depicts the mother of soul. That's why I love listening to all of her music. I love seeing any video of her singing. The Spirit of God, working with her and James Cleveland. And for all the naysayers that are talking about, well, their lives was what? God used these individuals to help bring many of black folk out of turbulent times through difficult situations of living in this colonialized, slave-driven, let's choke out a black man mentality America that we live in. I've been in my studio here for 2 hours preparing to do this webcast and doing it, and ended up having church with my brothers and my sisters. And I want to thank you for coming to my website today. I don't apologize for going over the moment. I love it. I'm glad I can go over the moment with you. God bless you. And listen, whatever you do, don't forget. See, I'm not trying to prove anything theologically. I don't know whether it was early Sunday morning that he got up. All I know is that something, someone, an entity of great magnitude spoke with me in August of 1967, 3 or 4 years before this particular video was made. And did you see all the people in the choir with the black hair and the naturals? Like, that's the way I wore my hair in Los Angeles back in the day. This is the way all the brothers had a tough natural. That's before we got into the dreads and everything else. There was a few Rasta men out there, but most of us was into the Afrocentricism, finding ourselves. And she helped us discover who we are. And I'm glad that I can say that even though I never personally met Aretha, I've seen her sing in concerts before. I got up near the stage. I didn't have to speak to her. What a blessing. And to see James Cleveland break down. The Spirit just told him, get up off that piano and go sit. That's how God moves in us. Then I understood the Mississippi Mass Choir. Then I understood why Nina Simone made that song, Mississippi. God damn. Because that's where the black folk was treated the worst in this country, by white privilege. So to see this, no, I haven't seen the new movies that they made called Amazing Grace about the life of Aretha Franklin. I want to see her sing. This was better than seeing a movie of somebody trying to imitate her. You can't imitate magnificence, just like you cannot imitate the life of a Donny Hathaway. If Donny got sick today with what he got sick with, we could probably heal him. They didn't have the medicine back then. So he left us. I'm telling you, God is good. And I thank you for taking an hour and almost 23 minutes listening to me on this webcast today. It's been great. Join me as soon as you can next time.